Welcome to the Kickstart Garage, where we want to inspire and educate the leaders of tomorrow. Join us as we learn from the best in the business.
Welcome back to the Kickstart Garage. I'm your host, Sam John Byrne. On today's show, I'm going to go through the key takeaways from The Little Book That Builds Wealth by Pat Dorsey. For anyone looking to start investing, this is another great book in the Little Book series. In fact, if you're going to take your investing seriously and you're not sure where to start, the Little Book series are great for building the foundations, and I'd highly recommend them. The Little Book That Builds Wealth provides a sensible framework for identifying companies that can sustain high returns on capital. In the book, Pat shows how an investor can look for durable competitive advantages in choosing equities. He goes through four sources of structural economic moats, those being intangible assets, switching costs, network effects, and cost advantages. They're particularly valuable in selecting long-term equities. So they're the moats you need to know. The book, I find, is a great deep dive into one of the tenets of Buffett's philosophy. As I said, that being buying a company with an economic moat, or in other words, a durable competitive advantage. It really just focuses on finding these companies that will be great today and more than likely be great in the future. It's more so an assessment of the quality of the business than a quantitative assessment here. If you can identify companies that have moats and you can purchase their shares at reasonable prices, you'll begin to build a portfolio of solid businesses that will improve your odds of doing well in the stock market over time. As usual, before we get into the key takeaways, I thought I'd give you a bit of background on the author. As I mentioned, the author of the book is Pat Dorsey. Absolutely no relation to Jack Dorsey, the ex-CEO of Twitter, as I've read this week. Pat Dorsey is a chartered financial analyst and founder of Dorsey Asset Management. From 2000 to 2011, Pat was the director of equity research for Morningstar, where he led a group of Morningstar's equity research group from 20 to 90 analysts. Alongside this book, he's also authored another book, The Five Rules of Successful Stock Market Investing, Morningstar's Guide to Building Wealth and Winning in the Market, which is another fantastic book, and I definitely recommend checking it out. It's not very different to this book that we're going to go through today, but it's definitely more comprehensive. Anyway, let's get into the key takeaways. Takeaway number one. At the start of this book, Dorsey outlines his investing framework before providing more detail on moats. So his investing framework, or as he likes to call it, the game plan, it's pretty simple. So number one is to identify businesses that can generate above average profits for many years. Number two is wait until the shares of those businesses trade for less than their intrinsic value and then buy them. Number three is hold those shares until either the business deteriorates, the shares become overvalued, or you find a better investment. That's the holding period should be measured in years, not months. And number four is repeat as necessary. This book is all geared toward finding wonderful businesses with long-term potential, which is pretty difficult to do. It sounds easy on paper, but it's definitely easier said than done. It's not often you find these companies. Well, you could see it's pretty easy to identify the companies, but it's even more, it's harder to find them at bargain prices or even fair prices in today's market. The reason being that high returns on capital attracts competition like bees to honey. Money always seeks the highest expected return. As such, returns on capital are mean reverting. In other words, companies with high returns see those returns dwindle as competition moves in, and companies with low returns on capital can see them improve as either they move into new lines of businesses, or you know, competition leaves the playing field. Sometimes they never improve and they just disappear. Some companies are, you know, they're able to withstand the relentless onslaught of competition for long periods of time, and these companies are wealth compounding machines. The exact same companies that Buffett is on the hunt for. Some examples would be, you know, Apple, Johnson & Johnson, Intel, Adobe, Oracle, and more. The aim is to find companies now that will withstand the competition in the future by asking one simple question. What prevents a smart, well-financed competitor from moving in on a company's turf? The answer is simply competitive advantage. Later on in this book, Dorsey also outlines how to value stocks using various multiples, such as price to sales, price to earnings, and when to use those types of multiples. In addition, he also highlights his sell criteria. As an investor, I'd be completely in line with Dorsey's sell criteria by bar probably 1 or 2 points. And selling a stock is 10 times harder than buying for various reasons. And he asks himself the following questions before selling a stock. Did I make a mistake? Has the company changed for the worse? Is there a better place for my money? Has the stock become too large a portion of my portfolio? Or am I wrong? That's essentially his investment strategy in a nutshell. And that's it for takeaway number one. Let's talk about moats. The first moat that Dorsey addresses in the book is intangible assets. For those of you that don't know, an intangible asset is essentially an asset that lacks substance. They can be the brand name, like Coca-Cola, patents, or regulatory licenses, as an example. For instance, strong brands can often be seen as a competitive advantage. That's not to be confused with the fact that any company with a brand has a strong competitive advantage. A popular brand is a profitable brand. So if a brand doesn't entice consumers to pay more, it may not create a competitive advantage. Quantitatively, you can actually see this in some firms. Take Apple, for example. I remember when I was reading Apple's 10K and I went and I checked out Morningstar's 10-year financials. You can see a divergence over the past 10 years between Apple's revenue and the selling and distribution costs. Despite their, you know, their selling and admins declining, revenue continued to go up. I mean, that's evidence right there of a strong brand. Similarly, regulation can also limit competition. Regulatory licenses can prevent new competition from entering the market, or at least make it tough for them to even compete. Think of pharmaceutical companies that need regulatory approval before selling a new drug. Once approved, they can charge extortionate fees for the drug without competition being able to replicate their drug for a number of years. These are just two examples of how intangibles can create moats. There are far more examples. Just have a search around. The next mode is switching costs. Back in the day before the technological disruption we're experiencing now, banks actually had high switching costs. Typically, if you signed up with a bank, it was the one you stuck with, not because you liked it, but because it was such a pain to switch. You'd have to change your direct debits, billing arrangements, filling out branch forms to close the current account, and then more forms to open up the new one. The process could take a couple of weeks. There may be closure fees. They had you locked in because it was such a pain to switch. It's not so much today with the emergence of fintech and technological advancements, but it's still a bit of a pain. But back in the day, there was a high switching cost compared to a petrol station, right? If you're driving down the road and you need petrol and you come to two garages right across from each other, you're going to go with the one with the cheapest fuel. There's effectively no switching cost there. You find switching costs when the benefit of switching from company A's product to company B product is smaller than the cost of doing so. Companies that benefit from switching costs are hard to find because you have to put yourself in the shoes of the consumer to understand the balance between the costs and benefits. I believe to an extent Facebook has high switching costs. This doesn't really apply to everyone, but some people will relate. There's other websites and apps where, you know, those websites and apps where you've signed up with Facebook to log into the service using, you know, a Facebook account. If you wanted to delete your Facebook, you'd have to change the email and all those services you use with Facebook, which is a bit of a pain. The more services you've signed up with using Facebook. That way Facebook locks in its user group and retains its monthly active users, even just by in doing that. Sticking with Facebook, we'll move on to our next moat, the network effect. Businesses that benefit from network effects see the value of their product or service increase with the number of users. The reason Facebook is such a valuable company is because the amount of monthly active users on the platform. As of the first quarter in 2021, Facebook had 2.19 billion active users on its platform. Facebook took lead by targeting people's innate drive to project their identity and network to other users. And as the user base expanded, this network effect compounded into a bandwagon effect. And, you know, nobody wanted to be left out of the platform, which just gave it its strength. Another smaller example would be the console wars between Xbox and Sony. Each console has their own exclusivity when it comes to gaming, less now so with crossplay, but before, if you wanted to play online with your friends, you typically bought the same console as them, so you could both play off the same server. Having different consoles meant that you couldn't do that. As such, the network effect led to more sales for the most dominant console. So far, all sources of competitive advantage that we've discussed have focused on price, or how much value a company can extract from its customers. Intangible assets, switching costs, and the network effect all allow a company to charge more for a product or service than it would be able to without those advantages. The converse of price, of course, is cost, and companies can also dig moats around their businesses by having a sustainably lower cost base than the competition. Typically, cost advantages matter most in industries where price is a large portion of the customer's purchase decision. Thinking about whether a product or service has an easily available substitute will steer you to industries in which cost advantages can create moats. Cheaper processes, better locations, and, you know, unique resources can all create cost advantages. Typically, the cost advantage is passed on to the consumer in the form of lower prices. A prime example of that would be Ryanair. They have a complete obsession with reducing costs, and in doing so are able to outcompete various airlines by charging lower fees. I think we'll finish it up there for today. I'd highly recommend checking out both of Pat's books if you're just starting out. They're very simple and straightforward and great resources for helping you build up a framework. To recap, we spoke briefly about Pat's investment framework. You know, I'd advise, you know, creating your own framework because it can really help you steer you in the right direction when making investment decisions. We talked briefly about various moats highlighted in the book, from intangible assets, switching costs, network effects, cost advantages. So if you've enjoyed this episode and want to be notified when the latest episode goes live, be sure to subscribe to the newsletter in the description of this episode. Alternatively, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube. But that's all for now, and we'll catch you in the next one.
Thanks for listening to the Kickstart Garage. This show is for entertainment purposes only.
No one on the show has provided investment advice. The information provided by the Kickstart Garage podcast should not be construed as investment advice. The opinions and views expressed on the Kickstart Garage podcast or those of the participants do not reflect those of the host or sponsors. The Kickstart Garage, its producers, sponsors, hosts, and guests shall not be liable for losses resulting from the investment decisions based upon the opinions or viewpoints presented on the Kickstart Garage.